Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free, or there'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast.
Hi all, and welcome to a dubious pleasure, not dubious, to see my friends, Celtic Underground friends, Ross Hall and Matthew Marr. Hail, hail history, Matthew Marr. But a dubious pleasure in the sense of what we have to discuss. I don't know, this is gives us in more low points than a low pointy thing, isn't it, this season? But I think it maybe got a new one there in Sunday, didn't it? But we'll be discussing that game, and we'll also be discussing mastermind behind the history conference that will be taking place in the Celtic Park next summer, which has already been hugely welcomed by the Celtic community. So Matthew will give us a little insight into that later on, if that's all right with you, Matthew. But let's start, because we must. What the hell was that on Sunday, Ross? I mean, I read your piece and I agreed with every word there. My God. We thought this was a mediocre team. That was the only thing I would disagree with you. Mediocrity would have been a stratosphere above what we witnessed in that pitchless pitch.
Can I start with a question? Give me an example of a low pointy thing. I'm curious. What's a low pointy thing?
It was my Blackadder.
This season is Livingston.
Right, okay. Well, yeah, you know, we are about as good as them, maybe, just.
As you say, what always gets me, and what I keep coming back to, where is the strategy? Where's the game plan? What have these players been working on? What are the patterns of play?
All valid questions, all questions I don't have the answer to. You know, some people will have read what I put up the other day there. And
feel free to quote yourself.
Well, no, it's not about quote myself. It's about, you know, if I asked you to describe something good about the Celtic team over the last couple of months, I would pretty much be confident that one of the things you would say would be, you know, if nothing else, they've shown a bit of grit and determination to just, you know, by hook or by crook, get through games and get out of games with 3 points, or the Rangers game where we just battened down the hatches and kind of, for lack of a better expression, basically just hoped for the best, got to penalties, and obviously we won. But when you look at, and it's not just a criticism of Martin O'Neill, it's a criticism of the season as a whole. You could go all the way back to pre-season and you look and you go, what have we added as a new dimension to this team from the team that was last season? Rodgers wasn't adding a new dimension because the team looked stale. Martin O'Neill came in and added the new dimension in terms of probably the grit and determination, but we'd never really put ourselves in a position where we needed to focus solely on that. So he added that. And then Wilfred Nancy came in and he added an attacking element, but just totally forwent the defending element, and it just was chaos. And then Martin O'Neill's come back in, and again we went back to sort of grit and determination. But I think we're kind of stuck in between a load of different styles of football, and I don't know what any of them are. Because if you asked any sort of coach at the high level how many phases of play there are, they would probably say somewhere in the region between 15 and 20. I can't point at one of them that we're good at right now. We're not good at defending. We're not good in transition. In any area of the pitch, we kind of look as if the players are getting the ball and then having to really have a good look around and think about what they're going to do next, as opposed to there being any sort of tempo or speed. And then on the rare occasion when you do see it, and we've seen it once on Sunday, which was the connection between Iheanacho, Yang, and then it went to Negrin. And then Negrin is passed at the end. I don't know if I want to blame him or if I want to blame the pitch or, you know. It was pure execution at the end, but that was one moment in that game.
Another moment, you mean?
Yeah, because and that's the thing. It's going to stand out in everybody's head what that moment was, because that was good. But after that, everything else was kind of slow, pretty predictable. Dundee United had us playing in places that they were happy to have us playing. They looked at the pitch and they clearly understood it. It's their home ground, of course they should. But I'm just finding it hard to understand that, you know, even after the first half, it seemed like a lot of our players were almost confused by the fact that there were certain areas of the pitch that just, it wasn't worthwhile trying to play in. And I'm going, you know, you are experienced guys. The vast majority of you have been in these situations before where you played on rubbish pitches, you played on all sorts, and you've come up with an answer. What is the problem this season? Like, what is it that...
It's just that a club.
All of them seem to have sort of lost a level in, not just in a level of aggression in their game, a level of tempo, but intensity. Almost like a level of intelligence. It's like the entire team is dumbed down and resorted to this sort of... It's not
nothing
even basic.
Football.
It's not very good. It's not good to watch. I understand why O'Neill has kind of went with a more direct style of play, but I don't think it really suits too many of our players, and that's a bit of a problem. So I hope in this international break that they're going to have a good reset, they're going to have a good sit down, have a look at what they can do to get the best out of each other, and then hopefully by the Dundee game we get something that looks a bit more like a Celtic team that we would recognise and want to see.
Matthew, was that at the end? I know there's been so many. It's the death of a thousand cuts, this championship challenge. No, it's not. I know it's not arithmetically
the
end.
It isn't the end on the practical basis that we're 5 points behind. There's 21 points to play for. Rangers are going to play Hearts at some point, which, you know, will offset one of them taking full points or both of them taking full points. But, you know, Hearts have still to come to Celtic Park. Rangers have still to come to Celtic Park. You know, the reality is that, you know, we've got slightly more home games left than the two teams I just mentioned do. So, no, it's not. I think it has been a bit of a topsy-turvy season. I saw a stat at the weekend that said only once this entire season have Celtic, Rangers and Hearts all won in the same game.
Yeah, I saw that.
As a consequence, we were doomed on Sunday after them having won. I think the honest answer is, though, look, I'm not saying that this will happen. We could be 8 points behind. You know, we could go to... At the end of the day, the last time we went to Dens, we lost. So we could end up being sitting here 2 weeks from now saying 8 points behind. Can we really make that up in 18, you know, with 18 points remaining? Possibly not. The flip side is the reverse. You know, could Dundee United take something at Ibrox? Maybe. Not convinced they will, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility. You know, if Dundee United draw and Hearts draw, I know this is now the curse and I'll end up being wrong, but I predicted 3 games ago that Hearts would drop points twice in the next 4 games. They proceeded to drop points in the first of that 4 run. They've only got one left. So I do wonder if, I do wonder in the games before the split, the 2 games before the split. I beg your pardon. I predicted Hearts would drop points 2 out of 4 games, and it was 2 games ago they started that. So there's 2 more games between now and the split. I do genuinely think Hearts will drop points once between...
I tend to agree with that question.
And I think it's been my worry. I mean, it was a few weeks ago when Hearts went to Ibrox and you had Celtic supporters going, oh, I don't know who I want to win today. And I remember going, are you mental? Aside from the fact, I'll be brutally honest, my default position is always, you know, who do you want to lose, Rangers or... And you don't need the second word there. You know, my default position is I always want Rangers to lose. But I think particularly this season, Hearts may well still win the league. You know, they still have got an advantage. You know, they might look and say if they can just keep a couple of points ahead of Rangers before we play them, they might think, well, you know, that feasible, you know, even if there's a draw in that game, then, you know, we could extend our lead. And in some ways, by that point, they might be going to hope Celtic win. You know, if Hearts win their next 2 games before the split, they might actually be hoping that we beat Rangers, presuming that might be the first or certainly second game after the split, because they'll be thinking, well, you know, that's a chance for us to extend our lead over the ones that are, for now at least, closest to them. I think the honest answer is, though, I just don't know. It has been a really an up and down season. And
has there been any ups? Where's the ups?
Well, there's been ups in the context of we're not out it. If you want an up, I know this is you've got to be careful with this, but I think sometimes as Celtic supporters, naturally, have perhaps higher ambitions, then, you know, at the end of the day, if you're a Livingston fan, you're not expecting to win the league. And you don't start the season thinking you're going to win the league. Same as if you support St Mirren, same as realistically if you support, well, this season is different. But really, 9 out of 12 teams at the start of the season knew they weren't going to win the league, and they're not. So I suppose if you're trying to be positive and say, yeah, we're not going to do it yet, we've had what is, by Celtic standards, a bad season, yet we could still win a double and have played in the other cup final. I mean, that isn't beyond the realm. It's really not in any way
crazy.
We are the favourites for the Scottish Cup. I'm not saying we'll win it. You know, we've already lost to St Mirren this season at Hampden, so I'm absolutely not saying that we're going to win the Scottish Cup. But we're the favourites to win the Scottish Cup. And depending on how the games fall, you know, just as I'm saying we could be 8 points behind, but, you know, Hearts lose, United win at Ibrox, and we win at Dens, and suddenly, you know, you're back to second top, you're 2 points off the top, and the picture starts to look different when, you know, we've then got a big chunk of home games to come. You know,
yeah, I mean,
remaining six games at that point, four of them will be at home for Celtic after this. So,
I don't know.
That's not to say, I'm not daft. I'm not sitting here thinking it's been a great season and we are going to win the league. But we're not dead yet.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's to do with the weaknesses of all three. That's the only thing that keeps you in it. None of the three teams look as if they're going to win their next seven.
No,
frankly,
I don't think,
do they?
I don't think
they don't.
The next seven.
So therefore, that creates possibilities itself. But you're really, you don't quite need snookers yet, you know. But you're the cue ball's right on the cushion, isn't it? I mean, look, we were talking. I went to see that Project Hail Mary on Saturday night, and you're thinking. I was thinking. This Celtic team this season is just a kind of Project Hail Mary. You know what the phrase means, yeah? Do we need to explain it to... We don't need to explain it to anybody who's watching, do we? The Hail Mary is the hit and hope pass or the throw pass when you've run out of all decent options. It's your last hurrah, your last chance just to give it a wake up the park and see if it can be caught. But I said that to my brother. I said, this team's like a kind of, it's just one big Hail Mary. This Celtic team right now, he said, it's not just one big Hail Mary. He said, it's a full rosary beads.
I thought you were going to throw in a glory bee or something there.
Hey, I just don't, it just, is everybody, I know I keep coming back to it, but just how uncoached they look. It was funny, last week, Sean Maloney in that interview when he was in his pro licence course, he said they were trying to incorporate bits of Ange Postecoglou kind of Celtic style. And then you watch that, Ross. It was what bits of Ange Postecoglou style? Running out of steam after 60 odd minutes.
That's I was going to say maybe Ange at Nottingham Forest or
yeah,
Ange when he had gave up on the Premiership to focus on Europe. I read that article and I genuinely laughed at the whole thing because. I just sort of thought, what a load of nonsense from beginning to end. And I was quite hopeful about Sean Maloney's coming into Celtic, both as pathway manager, you know, and as an assistant. But then someone said this to me the other day, and it makes perfect sense, in the sense of Martin O'Neill's never really coached a football team for years. Like, even when he was last at Celtic, it was Steve Walford and John Robertson kind of done the majority of the coaching. But they were his coaches, so they were his guys. They understood what his wants were.
Bringing his philosophy, ideas to life.
Yeah, so the three of them were ingrained in the philosophy and how they wanted to play.
Sync.
Someone said to me the other day, they went, you've got, Martin O'Neill can talk positively about Maloney and Fotheringham and all the rest of them, but they all come from very different schools in regards to how they would want to play football. So if you'd watch Sean Maloney's Hibs team and his Wigan team, they were probably closer to a Brendan Rodgers style of play. There was a lot more possession, you know, wanting to play through the thirds. I'd never seen Mark Fotheringham's Huddersfield team, but I know obviously he worked under like Felix McGath and things like that. I've seen Stephen McManus's B team. I'm not going to talk about that, but let's just say...
You wish you hadn't,
You know, I'm glad I don't pay to watch them. It's more part of work as opposed to pay to... And then you've got, obviously, Martin O'Neill. So you've got a lot of different ideas. And so although they can all sort of say, well, it's Martin's instructions and we're following them, because they're all kind of coming from different schools of thought, how does that message then get passed across to players? And is that why we're seeing such a broken identity in large parts of games, where you're sort of saying, is the message clear to the players? Are the players sort of going, well, you're saying you want this, but does that work for us? And so much like, and this is the point I made in the sense of, the players were quite quick to criticise Wilfred Nancy and training methods behind closed doors. But is it more difficult for them now it's their pals? And I don't mean that in a sort of cheeky, disrespectful way, but what I'm saying is you've got, the standards haven't improved in terms of the play. The coaching that you rightly said, you're sort of looking at the pitch and going, I don't see it. I just don't see any phases of play where look and go, that looks as if it's been done by a clear design where it's like, that's a training ground move or whatever. I just see loads of broken bits of different things. And I kind of wonder if my friend had a valid point where he said, maybe it's just the fact that you've got players whose confidence have taken a lot of hits. They've had loads of different messages.
Well, of course.
And most of them, you know, and again, I don't want to give them excuses because they don't deserve any for this season, but a lot of them have been sent to the well for a long, long time. And is it now just at a point where the legs have lost a yard? Mentally, they're kind of just a bit fatigued for everything. And you've got all the noise that goes on around the club that sort of comes with that. Is it just that it's just a step too far and there's just too many messages and they're now at the point where it's like you go to uni and you're sat at a lecture and you've been at lectures all day and you get to the last one and you're just sat going, I have no idea what this guy's talking about and I really don't care. I just want it to end. And so the flip side of that is they've got Martin O'Neill who's motivating them and, you know, they're going on and they're trying their best, but they're just a bit, fed up's the wrong word, but it's just... Confused messages, too fatigued, and just kind of like, you know, they needed help. In January, they really needed help, and they never got it. And so, to me, I just sort of look and go, Callum McGregor goes straight back into the team on Sunday. That, to me, was confusing, because I'm going, that pitch is awful. He's had a muscle injury. That, to me, seemed a bizarre game to put him back in. Because if you're going, he's going to be key to the last sort of, especially the split games where you're going, you really want him in the team. Is that the game where I throw him back in? That was a no for me. And then up front, you're going, Iheanacho's been on ice for large parts of the season.
That was his first start since the League Cup final.
Yeah, and most of the minutes he's played has been in the Europa League this season. So you're looking and you're going, you've flung him in. And to me, it's like we're picking strikers out of a hat on a Saturday or on a Sunday and just going, your turn today. It's confusing. It was a really, really poor game. It was absolutely awful. The pitch was awful, but, you know, you have to adapt. And they never, Dundee United would deserve winners. And I think that's kind of it for me for that game in the sense that I just sort of look and go, they've got a week and a half for the point of recording to the Dundee game. It's probably going to be the most important week and a half a training that the players who are still here are going to have. And then they're just going to need to come to some sort of idea and someone is going to have to coach them properly in that period and sort of go...
Are you free, Ross?
The Dundee and St Mirren games are probably bigger than the split games because you can't lose either of them. They just can't. I know Callum McGregor said 5 or 6. No. The next two, every game is just must win and then it's the next one. Which is weird for me because that's normally the message they always send when they've had a bit of a rough time. It's next one, we just need to go and, you know, best foot forward, try and win the next game. And then just keep on going. Forget 5, 6 games, forget 7 games. Every one between now and the end of the season is a cup final or a semi-final in case of St Mirren game. But just hit that Dundee game and lay down a marker for what you're going to be for the rest of the season. If they can't do that against Dundee and St Mirren, I've got very little hope as it is. I don't think we'll win the league. But if they can do something in those two games, if they can perform in those two games and at least sort of lay down a marker that says to everybody, do you know what? You're going to have to work really hard to beat us. And we're going to put as many points on the board as possible that puts all the pressure on you, then great. But if they can't lay down a marker in those two games, not just in terms of results, but in terms of some sort of level of performance, then to me, I would just go into the split and sort of go, well, you know.
Chuck the Hearts game. Give up to the Rangers game.
Let's hope for the best. But, you know, my Uncle Mark, he lives in Amsterdam. He'd been a Hearts season ticket holder for, like, you know, my entire life, pretty much. And he messages back and forwards for the games with me. So he'll message me during their games if I sit and watch theirs and vice versa. He had said to me, he's like, as a Hearts fan, he's convinced they'll fail. And I'm going, I think
he's almost convinced that as well. You know, that's like...
Yeah. But I was like, I think you're doing fine. And the reason I think they're doing better than us and Rangers is because a lot of people will criticise Hearts for the style of play. But if I go back through my lifetime, especially the last sort of 20 years or so, ever since they won the Scottish Cup against Rangers, after the years and all won it, the best Hearts teams that I've seen have been very like this team. They've been very aggressive, followed at the back, not overly spectacular in the middle, but they've always had a player somewhere in the middle that kind of contributes a wee bit more going forward. So whether it was Stevie Fulton, Colin Cameron, Rudy Scatchell was then the sort of wide player who'd done it. The structure of the team and the style of play is not a million miles away from what we are now.
There's always a kind of functional element.
At the front end, they've got players who are able to go about their game with confidence because they're looking behind them and going, that defence is strong, that midfield is solid, they're getting Cammy Devlin back. Shanklin came on at the weekend and that seemed to really lift them. So I sort of look at him and go, do you know what? The one major positive that you've got if you're them is you're looking and going, we're a good version of what a good Hearts team has been for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I get that.
Because they've tried to move away from that and they've had the likes of Critchley who tried to play nice football. Never worked for them. They work at their best in this sort of setup. So they are comfortable in their own skin. Whereas that's probably my biggest problem with Celtic right now. We're trying to play in a way that we're not comfortable with. And it looks at it because we're trying to go more direct.
Even if you could tell me what way they're trying to play in, that would be a start. Matthew, the reason why I can't see a pathway is because of the paucity of kind of striker options. Because we've talked about it on here before, it's the worst, and I don't think any has disagreed with that, it's the poorest in three decades in terms of producing a front third of the team.
Yeah,
how's that going to be resolved at all?
Well, it's not going to be resolved between now and the end of the season, is the simple reality. There's not a free agent out there that's just waiting to sign for Celtic. So the reality is, the front options, which for multiple reasons aren't great, are as good as it's got, you know, because that's what it is. There isn't any way. It would be different if we were saying, oh, well, we've got a first-choice centre-forward, you know, we've got, you know, this isn't Henrik Larsson coming back from a broken leg. We're not saying any day now our talismanic forward is coming back in the team. The reality is what we've
got. Callum Osmond, we won goal.
So, I mean, this, in some ways, this isn't really a surprise. I think the weekend's game wasn't a surprise in the sense that for the last few games, in some ways we can praise the team for, you know, coming back from 2-0 down at Ibrox, from basically being outplayed at Ibrox but not conceding and so getting through on penalties, for the last minute goals that we had and all the rest of it. But the reality is, if you look at our run of what six or seven games before the weekend, what have you got? You've got last minute wins against, you know, Dundee and so on. You've got a result where you've struggled at Ibrox, albeit showed a lot of grit, but, you know, it certainly didn't look great. It wasn't like in any of those games you went, we looked really good. Mm. You know, we looked capable of it. We have lost to Hibs at home. Now, we can complain about the penalty we should have had all we like, but the reality is there's a game that we've lost. We've been riding our luck. If you look in, you know, if you look the last six or seven games in the lead up to Tannadice, we have either been getting last minute winners or we have been, you know, scraping draws and all the rest of it. And it's inevitable that it's a bit like anything else. You know, my gran was born in 1910. My gran used to go to see Celtic. She used to go in the 60s and 70s at a time when that was obviously quite, you know, very unusual for women. Spoke about, you know, games. She was at the Ibrox disaster game and all stuff like that. But this is not a football analogy, but just when I think of gran talks about when she was a little girl, they used to play a game called Run and Ruin the Midden. and the midden was in your back, in the backcourt, and it was obviously full of all sorts of rubbish, both human and otherwise, I think sometimes, you know. It wasn't very nice. And Grant, I always remember Grant talking about, the game was, how brave were you? You were going to run, how close would you run next to the edge? Now, of course, the danger of running around the midden, if you can be as brave as you like, but the closer you get to the edge, the more likely you're going to fall in and be literally in the shit. And that's where Celtic have been. Celtic have been living very, very, very close to the edge for weeks now. And the reality is, if you keep living close to the edge, at some point, you're going to end up in the shit. And that's what happened to Celtic at Tannadice. We've been riding our luck for a number of weeks. We've went to a ground where, yeah, the pitch was to, we can criticise the pitch all we like, and we should. You know, really, it was ridiculous. But we've been relying on luck for weeks. We've gone to a difficult away ground, a ground where we've dropped points already. It wasn't a shock. You know, it was disappointing. You might have been angered by it. I'm not saying I necessarily predicted we'd lose 2-0, but because of the way we've been struggling for the past few weeks, I have been waiting on another, there's going to be a bad day.
Well, there was. As I say, the Hibs game's no exactly distant memory, is it?
Well, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. So, you know, if you look at our run-up, if you look at our run to it, you know, even the Motherwell game, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going into all this notion that Motherwell were somehow hard done by from referees or anything, but them going down to 10 men was a game-changing moment. I'll be honest, I'm not convinced we'd have lost that game, but I think if, for example, if that defender hadn't been Sadat, if that defender had, you know, had been positioned 2 yards forward and hadn't done it or anything like that, I think that game might well have ended up in a draw. And if anything, we might have lost. So, you know, in many ways, the Motherwell game is the one oasis of games that you ended up comfortable in the past seven.
And yeah,
that was a degree of fortune to. So it was inevitable that we were going to drop points. And as we've just said, you know, there's 21 points remaining. You know, Callum McGregor's point, I'm not convinced I agree, but the whole, you have to win five games. My problem with the five games, you know, McGregor's, if we win five games, if we win five games, now, you could draw the other two, which changes the dynamic a bit. But if we lose two and draw and win five, then you need Hearts and Rangers to lose four times in the remaining games. That's what you would have to do.
I think, but surely if two of the wins, the two of the wins have to be against Hearts and Rangers.
But you just do the maths of it. You know, Hearts are 5 points ahead of us. There's 21 left. If we win the next, you know, if we win five of our seven games and lose the other two, then it's basic maths. The most you could be ahead of Hearts then is 16. Now, Hearts would then, in that same, you know, Hearts would have the seven games. Now, even if we beat them in one of them, Hearts can still win the six and win the lead. Now, I'm not saying that they would do that, but I'm not convinced that, it's a bit like what Ross says. I think if we only win five games between now and the end of the season, I actually don't think that'll be enough, to be perfectly honest.
I think
six wins is the absolute minimum we can get away with. And the seventh game cannot be against Hearts or Rangers. You know, they would have to be beaten in that.
I actually think they two are fallible enough with away games. The three sides, you see it, it's like, I know Celtic lost at home to Hibs. Rangers, I suppose, dropped points against Celtic at Ibrox. But by and large, they get their business done at home. But away from home, the three of them are incredibly kind of get atable for opponents, and opponents know it. I don't think any team fears playing any of these three title challengers.
No, and I think that's from a Celtic perspective, because that's obviously what you're more interested in. I think when it comes to Celtic, that what you're really, I think that is where the fear's gone. There isn't any fear, and why would you? If I was, you know, if Livingston were playing Celtic, I know we're not playing them, we won't play Livingston again, but if I was the bottom of the league team, even if I was going to Celtic Park just now, I wouldn't, you'd be wary, you wouldn't be daft, you wouldn't be arrogant and going, oh, it's easy to take it. But you think over the years, the number of times teams have come to Celtic Park, and really, to be honest, yeah, you can see within 2 minutes of the game starting that you're going to win comfortably, and that they would like to be anywhere else in the world. Now, teams clearly come and think, and even if we go ahead in a game, I don't think teams necessarily are like, oh, it's going to be a long day now. I think teams think, well, let's hope we score soon, you know, because if we do, this game is still there. And, you know, that's there's multiple reasons for that. But, yeah, I think in terms of where we are just now, the honest answer is Sunday was very disappointing, but I don't think it was a big shock. I think if you look at the general pattern of the previous weeks, we were definitely going to lose at some point, again, having lost to Hibs as well.
It was a bit, I mean, Celtic have been playing kind of death row football, and with these late winners and such, like, you know, the sentence is commuted, you know, but there comes a point, you know, when got people on death row, they don't, the phone call doesn't come that the sentence is commuted and they get fried, you know, or the old lethal injection. And that's what it was felt like. It's like, you know, just know it might, one of these times when they're going to carry out the execution, you're not going to have the stay of execution. And that was Sunday. That's the fear. You're going back up to Dens Park next Sunday, Ross, and Celtic have been in Dundee three times this year and lost all three. That must be, I can't, somebody, I think somebody said it was 89 or something like that happened, or that was the last time that had happened. They'd lost three times in Dundee.
I'm pretty sure for anybody who is interested in like records that have lasted periods of time, there have probably been numerous negative ones this season that you could just go, well, that's that one, reset, go again, whether it's Dundee or...
What did you do against Dundee as Celtic manager?
Yeah.
And
so what...
If you want a positive, we can still lose one more game this season and it'll be the same number of games we lost for 10 men won the league in 79. You know, so we've got a bit of leeway. Yeah. We can lose one more and win six. And actually, I have this notion, if we were to lose one more and win six, I think five is too much. I think, as I say, I think if we win five and lose two, I think that's too much. I have the notion, if we were to win six, as long as that included Rangers.
It has to include Rangers and Hearts.
Even if we lost one, I have the notion we might end up scraping over the line. But I don't know.
Can you see this? I mean, is there anything that says to you that this team is capable of winning six out of the next seven games?
No, but then only the fact, look, we said earlier the concept of like a cup final and treating a game as a one-off. You know, I can think of games where we've walked onto the park as comfortable favourites and haven't won. I can think of games where we've walked onto the park and are not favourites, like against Barcelona and things like that, and we have won. And football is full of examples where, you know, you expect a team to win and they don't, or you expect a team to lose and they don't. So if you break it down, you know, in the concept of seven games, yeah, it probably is difficult to see. But can we go, you know, if you break it down logically, are we capable of going to Dens Park and winning? Well, yes.
Yeah, I know. If you individualise it, if you just break it down,
aren't at home? Well, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And if you do that, as Ross says, suddenly... I do have a thing. If you win the next two games, I think you'll be closer to the top than you currently are. Whether you're second or not, I don't know, but I think you'll definitely be closer to the top. So if you go in, even if, let's even say Hearts draw one of those games, they don't even have to lose. So Hearts draw, you know, obviously putting them, and they win the other game. So Hearts at that point would be 3 points clear of us going into the split if we won our two games as well. You know, 3 points behind with 15 to play when you've to play Hearts isn't some, oh my goodness, this is insurmountable.
I know.
And I've been reading up lots recently about, you know, like 40, it's obviously 40 years since you know, the events of Love Street and all the rest of it in 86.
Yeah, I follow Tweet Celtic, you know, he's been on here, I had him on me.
And I think if you look at where we were for parts of that season,
even at this point,
the last day, you know, Danny McGrain, I remember reading a Danny McGrain interview where he spoke about, you know, that game beforehand. And he said, we wouldn't have come out and publicly said it. He says, but in the dressing room, we had completely written the game off. We thought we were going... You see, I think there was a hint, almost part of the reason we won so well at Love Street was there was absolutely no pressure. We knew, Celtic knew they weren't going to win the league. They knew it was a complete irrelevance, that Hearts would at least get a point in Dundee. So it was no pressure. It was the last game of the season. It was a bit like a sort of an exhibition end of season friendly, because... what did it matter? And the pressure was off. But there's an example. We don't know. I think there's a big question about, I wonder what they'll do fixture-wise for...
That's huge.
If I had a prediction, I think we'll all be away from home on the last day. And I say that for two reasons. One, it would actually really suit me because I've got something on that my wife will not talk to me if I go to the football rather than this. But if we could, I will be at the game. So it would make my life easier in some ways. So there's maybe an element of me is sort of wishing for that. I think I've been sort of thinking about, especially in the context of what happened at Ibrox. So let's do the maths of this, right? We've got three home games after the split. Logically, therefore, if there's going to be a team at home on the last day, you would think we've got a greater chance of it than Rangers or Hearts. It's not impossible, but it could be. But I think if a team was going to be at home, I think you then get into an interesting thing about policing. So we're at home on the last day of the season, and Rangers win the league. I know it's a different part, but if you think of the way that people gathered in town to celebrate, well, Celtic fans at the Strongate, if you go back to George Square with Rangers fans, I know that was in the context of COVID. But clearly, if Rangers win the league, people
do it again. They will do that again.
They are going to gather somewhere. Now, if you're the police, you'd be saying to the SPL, we don't want Celtic fans coming back into town. You know, tens of thousands of people coming back at the same time as Rangers fans are spilling out of pubs in the town and starting to celebrate. I have the, to me, one of the ways you get around that is you tell all three teams they're away from home on the last day. You also take away any complaint about, which is nonsense. The whole, I always hate when people are like, oh, if we're away on the last day, that's a conspiracy. But the reality is, every team's got 19 games at home. Every team's got 19 games away. We need to play the teams we're
going. Well,
we
know mostly in SPFL, you know.
From a top perspective, you know, teams going for the league always play 19 home, 19 away. There's never been a time where it could have been us or Rangers or us and Aberdeen, but they need the one. So the honest answer is, you need to play 19 home, you need to play 19 away. I do just think, I have the strong feeling that we'll have Rangers.
You may be right. What can't happen? What can't happen is it's written into the rules, no team will have two away games to end the season or two home games to end the season. So that would allow Celtics. So Celtic would then maybe be away.
I actually
be away, they'd be away the first week. They'd be home at Rangers the next week.
No, we wouldn't, because then you'd be three away games. You'd have three home games in a row then.
No. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, I might end up being wrong. I think we'll be home, away, home, home, and away on the last day. Now, I might be talking complete rubbish, but I just think if I was the police, especially given all the stuff recently about Ibrox, I would look and say, it's fine. If Rangers are away on the final day and we're at home and we win the league, well, there's not. I know there's the whole complaints that people don't want Strongate at all, but there's not that problem of, you know, Rangers fans and Celtic fans. Whereas if Rangers are away, we're at home, and Rangers win the league and there's a big crowd gathers.
No, you're right. I hadn't thought about that. But Ross, to even get to for that to matter, what would you do differently at Dens? What can change?
Well, they've got 10 days to work that out. To me, I would change the system. I would go to 2 up front. I think we're talking about the fact that we've lacked goals all season. I think a large part of that has been, one, we've got strikers who are not very good, and two, we've got strikers who have been isolated.
Yes.
And so I think if it was me for the next 10 days, the problem is obviously some players are away, Dyson's away, which is a bit of a problem. But to me, I would probably, if I was going to play the way O'Neill's wanting to play and just be more direct, I would almost go back to the sort of idea where, back to days where you're going to have the fullback and the wide midfielder, back to the Simon Donnelly, Jackie McNamara, crosses in the box and take my chances with two strikers.
Who would those two strikers be? Would it be Iheanacho and
this? He actually did
some all right things, I thought, on Sunday.
Because January will rip my knitting for an eternity. It was like anybody who had their fingerprints on that should have their fingernails pulled out and shoved where the sun doesn't shine. But if I had to choose, I would basically take Iheanacho and get him as fit as I could possibly get him over the next 10 days. And I would play him with either Chwanchara or Maeda. You've got Iheanacho likes to drop off. Like, he'd done it against Dundee United. The problem was there was never anybody near him. So
exactly.
He got a lot of criticism for Sutton, him and Yang, for not going and challenging him for certain balls. And I'm going, well, we've watched 40, 50, 60 minutes of football, whatever. There was a lot of direct balls put in their direction. And even if they went to challenge for it, there was nobody getting close enough to play for the second ball. So eventually, again, it kind of becomes that sort of thing where you're just like, you know, they're going to win it anyway. So I'm better just holding my position and conserving energy, especially for an actual whose fitness is questionable. So I would want to pair him with someone who's going to run beyond and run into channels. So for me, it would be him in the middle, and then either Chvanchara, who likes to play down the sides, or Maeda, because for all his faults, he's going to go and press players and potentially cause teams to make mistakes in their own final third. Those would be the two. And then in the wide areas, I would leave Yang either on the right or on the left. And I would actually, it sounds really daft, I would play with three central midfielders, with one of them, probably Oxlade-Chamberlain, on the left. Because if you look through all our data for this season, I would probably, just off the top of my head, bet that 70% of the games, the majority of our build-up goes down the left. So against Dundee United, if you looked at the build-up, the pass maps as to where, it was all to Tierney. Like the majority of the passes went to Tierney through McGregor or through Scales. It was all kind of build-up to the right. And it was the same even when Araujo was in the team. The majority of our build-up plays left. So I would want to have someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain or even McGregor playing slightly left-centre, almost like Neil Lennon done with Chris Commons, but in reverse. He would play Ledley, Brown and whoever else, McGregor or Kyall or whoever. But he would have one of them slightly off the centre, and then Commons got the sort of freedom to stay forward, and Commons scored by a load of goals. I'm almost going to create the reverse of that and go, I'm going to do it on the other side. I'm going to let Yang stay further forward on the right because he's the only winger who's carrying any sort of form, and he scored a couple of goals. I'll have my two forwards. I can then still create my front three because I can have Maeda drifting off the left, or I can have Chvanchara drifting off the left. But I would go with that, and then I would allow Tierney the freedom of the left-hand side because he's the best crosser of the ball. And I would probably just try and play more direct with that in mind and go that route. Because I know some people are looking and going, Alistair Johnston is obviously away training with Canada, but he's missed a lot of football.
No, he's not coming back.
Maybe
the time for Ralston, in the sense, I know Ralston gets his critics, but maybe he's got plenty of experience.
Yeah, Ralston, I have no problem with Donovan playing. Donovan's had a bit of grief, but defensively, there's not been a lot he's done wrong. In the Dundee game, he made a few iffy passes, but so did everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of going, well, why?
I've liked Donovan. I've been sad to see the kind of pile on.
Yeah, but whoever it is, I just sort of think it doesn't matter what I think they should do. I think, as I say, to me, it's just these next 10 days. And I just want to see the Dundee game be at a better level. If it's not a better level, then you can quote me. You don't need me on the podcast to say, if we don't see two better performances in those two games, I'll have written off the season and just be going, you know, Scottish Cup final with a bit of luck.
With a bit of luck.
Next season,
if they don't see better performances in those next two games, the Scottish Cup final might seem like a bit of a stretch.
That might be right, but Matthew's right in what he said earlier. If it's only five games, that's 15 points. That's 76 points for the season in total. There's no danger that's winning the league. No danger. Because Hearts have still got, I think, 86 on the table. I don't see Hearts dropping 10 points. And I think Rangers have got, what did I put the other day? Rangers have got 84 on the table. Hearts have got 87, sorry. So if we ended up with 76, you're looking at 11 points to be dropped from Hearts. That, I don't see it.
No, that was, I mean, thinking of the maths, as I was saying before, you know,
yeah,
21 just points to play for, Hearts are five clear of us.
You're so probably right, about the six.
If we win five, then, you know, that's basically, that's us 10 clear of Hearts before you factor in their seven games. And that's simply not going to, you know, that's not going to be enough. As I say, six.
Although they could choke. Hearts could choke.
And look, this is what we said. We don't know. It's 2 weeks from now, we could do this exact thing again. Hearts could have lost at the weekend. Rangers could have even drawn. And then suddenly we're going, well, we're only two off the top. And, or three off the, whatever we would be at that point. Two off the top we would be if Hearts were to lose. We're only two off the top. And there's still six games to go. That's not even close to being an insurmountable thing. Equally, we could be eight behind. So
the last sets of games, so we play last when they come back for the break. We're the Sunday game, 4:30.
4:30.
So Hearts are the same day at Livy at 2, and Rangers are the day before at home and Dundee United, and then the last set of games before the split, Rangers are up last, away to Falkirk. and Hearts are at home to Motherwell, and we are at home to St Mirren. So I think that's been a big part of this season as well, especially with the Europa League. There's been very few games where we've kicked off before anybody. We've off, like, you know, we're naturally playing catch up because we've lost that many games that we're always going to be playing catch up anyway. But also the fact that we're normally last on the schedule. In fact, the only week where we actually, the other week there when we did catch up was one of the first weeks, I think, in probably months where we had been first.
It's true. That's so true. And then
Matt, you said it, you know, the stat about there's only been one occasion this week where everybody's won. So let's pray one of them drops points next up, because we're last up.
One, Ross, if we're praying, let's pray both of them drop points.
Well, yeah,
let's pray. And talking of prayers, we pray that it's going to be a great success on June the 6th, the first ever Celtic History Conference. How did this come about, Matthew?
So there's been a range of different things. Obviously, there's various people do Celtic history things. There is numerous people, you know, write articles, write books, and so on. You know, you've got a lot of people connected to Celtic. You know, Celtic, we can criticise Celtic all we like, you know, but we've obviously got, you know, like, there's lots of tour guides and all the rest of it at Parkhead that do a really good job, you know, like, of taking people around, telling them the story. From my perspective, obviously, I do all the things that we've just said, but obviously I do the walking tours as well, like, you know, the outside walking tours around different parts of Glasgow. And I think what that does is you've then got a sort of a community of sorts that knows each other. People, you know, with a particular, I don't mean like just people who are like, oh, I'm quite interested in Celtic history, but people who really practically do things that are about researching, writing, and telling that story. One particular guy, from my perspective, so a guy called David Watt. David has been involved in lots of things, an academic, but David was involved in Celts for Change, if you go back. I mean, was actually one of the people that used to book the meetings for Celts for Change, if you go back to, you know, to the 90s, and has been involved in other different things with Celtic as well. But David had spoke to me a while ago about it would be good to basically get to more formalise, to bring people, all these disparate people together. St. Anthony of this house, as it were.
Yes.
He'd had a similar thing. You know, he'd suggested something a while ago. He'd put something on Twitter saying, look, thinking of getting a group together, would people be interested? And sort of from there, those things sort of came together. And eventually, so we basically all met up. So with, as I say, Stephen, or St. Anthony, David, myself, and then some other people that have been involved in Celtic research. You know, Margot McQuaid, who I think you will know.
Yeah, I worked with Margot at Celtic.
Obviously, yep. Worked at Celtic. We've got people.
She was supposed to, she used to, when the museum, remember, there was a museum at Celtic.
Yeah, So obviously Margot is a real interest. We've got people like Michael Connolly, you know, Michael wrote the Brother Walford biography, and Joe Bradley, you know, who's, you know, basically edited a whole series of books, as well as writing, not just about Celtic, but about the sort of the wider context of Irish social history and all the rest of it. So effectively what you had is you had all these people, and David really was the sort of the driving force in terms of saying, right, let's actually all meet. And at first when we met, there was a question of what are we meeting for? Not in a bad way, but in a, right, we're all now together. We agree we'd like to do something. What's that something going to be? And eventually the decision was there's going to be what's going to happen? There's going to be a conference. So we went through various things. Basically, the conference will look at various different aspects of Celtic history. You know, you've got a lot of football conferences, I think. I think, though, right, maybe I'm making just a bold, grandiose claim, but
make it, go for it.
I think this is the first academic style football history conference about a single team ever. There are, don't get me wrong, there's lots of football history conferences, you know, that go around, but they are all usually about, well, they are about multiple teams. If you look at, you know, they're not about, in fact, they're often not even about a team. They're about, it might be about a team, it might be an aspect of football and all the rest of it. But I know you get events connected to a team that might touch on history. I know you can have, like, former players coming together. I know you get speakers, you know, like, you can go to, like, different pubs and you can hear, like, former players talk. But that's not what this is about. This is about more of a sort of an academic style of a discussion platform of where you'll have people who, maybe myself excluded, but other than that, you know, who are expert, you know, in different aspects of either Celtic itself or issues that are sort of logically connected to Celtic who are all going to present. There will be opportunities, you know, for people to take part in discussions, particularly there's a plenary session like planned at the end of the session when people will have a chance to offer an opinion or pose questions and all the rest of it. So I think for an academic style conference about football history that is devoted to a single team, I have looked it up. I have done a wee bit of research. I can't see anything else. The closest I can find is Real Madrid have a sort of convention where maybe occasionally one of the talks will be a bit about the history. But to be honest, most of the time it's this is the best way to attack down the left wing, and this is our plans for the Bernabeu or stuff like that. It's not really a here's a thing discussing different aspects of Celtic's history. So that's really when it came about. You know, it's to say, so we have the embryo of people getting together and saying, let's have something. There is an agreement, let's have a conference. And then it's more just a question of let's do it and let's see how the first one goes.
It was oversubscribed within a day or two.
Not even a day or two, it was oversubscribed. So we launched it on St. Patrick's Day. There'll be capacity for 300. And I think the last count, we're currently sitting at about 130 on the reserve list. There was a reserve list from day one. So basically from day one, if you didn't book on the first day, you weren't booking, basically.
Plums.
And that was even with releasing extra, because we released a certain amount on the first day. And I saw comments from people online, and some people I know had messaged me and had said, it's sold out. And then I was actually right next to Celtic Park at the time. I was at the Emirates for something. And I checked my phone and I went, oh, that's strange. There is spaces. And I messaged David, you know, who's the sort of the lead organiser. And he'd said, oh, yeah, I just released some more. You know, I know we were keeping back some in reserve, but I just decided to put them out. But they were gone. So literally it was sold out on the first day. As I say, I think the last count, it was something like 130 on the reserve list. If people are interested, look, I mean, it's been publicised in different places. It was mentioned on, you know, it's been mentioned some of the online sites. Certainly from mine, if people are looking for a link, if you go into Hail Hail History on the Twitter page, it's my pinned tweet. If people are looking for a link to book, I would still suggest if people want to go, to put your name on the reserve list. I think the one, we deliberately made it free because we wanted people to come along. We didn't want to sort of get into issues of money or anything like that. I think the reality is, though, that sometimes a free event, people will book. I mean, I'll be brutally honest, I've already spoke to one or two people who've said to me, I booked, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, so yeah.
I strongly suspect that as we get nearer the time, that there'll be some, I'm not saying that there'll be 130 spaces, but you don't know. A friend actually who attended a history conference relatively recently said there was 400 at that. He said, and 150 of them were not going until 3 days before.
That's what happened when I did something like this.
Started pulling out. So I think it's well worth putting your name down. It's worth putting your name down for two reasons. One, there is still a chance that something will come up, you know. It's one of those ones, even if, let's say 80 people pull out in the week leading up to it, it doesn't necessarily mean that all the 130 will go, because people might have other plans. I didn't have anything. So I think it's worth putting your name down. The other reason it's worth doing that is, in the long run, the aim is to make this an annual event. And that's what we would like to do. And as I say, there are so many people do so many great things to do with Celtic's history. And the vast, vast majority of those people aren't speaking at this conference, partly because it was just the first one in organising it. But, you know, we're not saying that the five people that are presenting this year, well, that's it. It's going to be those five every year. That's absolutely not the case. What we'd be looking to do in the longer term is bring in, you know, other stories, other voices. And, you know, part of one of the things that we'll be doing at the end of this first conference is asking people, you know, in future, one, is it something you would be interested in doing yourself? And even if not that, is there something that you would perhaps like to see featured in future? And it is hopefully a bit different. You know, the five talks that we've got about are going to... So the opening talk will be Dr. Joe Bradley. And he is going to be looking at, you know, the origins of Celtic. So, you know, the events that led up to it and that aspect of how Celtic developed in the opening years. Michael is going to be speaking about Brother Walfred, of which he is quite literally the world leading expert. Margot's got an interesting one, though, a sort of a different angle. Margot's point is very much about the idea of, you know, it's sort of termed whose history is it anyway? Football, the reality is clearly the majority.
That's a good thought-provoking title.
Clearly the majority of people that go to games are men. But there is a sizable number of women go, and there's always been a group of women go. But if you actually look at who tells the story of Celtic, there are very, very few people. I mean, I own almost every Celtic book that's ever been written. I think I'm missing about 10. I own well over 400 books that are either explicitly or in part about Celtic. And, I mean, I'd have to sit and work it out, but I can't imagine any more than 10 of those. In fact, I'm not even convinced it's as much as
I was going to say, you're maybe being generous there with 10.
No, I think I'm being generous. I mean, the name that instantly jumps out to me, Marie Rowan, who used to work at Celtic as a tour guide, wrote a book about Dan Doyle. Yeah, I said 10 simply because I didn't want somebody to tell me later, oh, you got it wrong. I'll be honest, I think 5 would be possibly still too generous. So in any case, that's part of Margot's story, you know, Margot's issue. Given that lots of women are interested in history, given that, you know, lots of women, I mean, statistically in schools, girls are more likely than boys to take history. So why is it then that the Celtic story is so overwhelmingly dominated? So that'll be Margot's one.
Well, that's good.
My story partly links into some of the walking tours I do, but is sort of featured on Deer Green Place, and it's the story of Celtic in Glasgow, but not the obvious ones. You know, I'm not going to be telling the story of Celtic at Hampden or Celtic Park. But I'm going to be looking at places that probably people walk past all the time and they don't realise, but, you know, there is an interesting quirk. And St Anthony, again, of this parish, as it were, is going to be talking about a little bit the work that's been done over the years to try and tell people about Celtic's history. So I'm in particular looking at the Celtic Wiki, that obviously is a fairly phenomenal resource.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, again, I don't think it's unreasonable. You are talking a world leading. When it comes to the Wiki, there's almost nothing else like it in the world.
Yeah.
Certainly
yep.
not to the level of depth it goes into. There's hopefully a lot of things people will find interesting.
That's good. That's a broad kind of spectrum of ideas. They're very different. You're just kind of mining the one scene there. Like, no, that's encouraging. I would be there if I wasn't. I'm going to see David Byrne in Birmingham that night. Dublin. He's in Dublin.
So
I'll be a Celtic spirit of a different type.
If people do want to book, though, so like I say, go into Hail Hail History.
Yeah. And if people have booked and can't.
You can also search via Eventbrite, which is the site, which is the booking forum.
All right, cool.
If you go into Eventbrite and you put Celtic History Conference, as you mentioned earlier, it's Saturday the 6th of June. It's a morning event, so it's 9:30 registration starts, but it's officially from 10 till about 1:30. It's actually at Celtic Park. Again, I know we're all meant to criticise Celtic and all the rest of it, and there's good reason for that, but I really do have to praise Celtic on this issue. Celtic have been really, really helpful. The reason it's free is that Celtic have given us use of the Kerrydale Suite without any charge. But they've given us spaces where we've actually been doing the planning meetings. You know, before anyone gets into, you know, not another penny. Well, that actually suits, because there is not another
penny. There's no pennies changing hands.
And actually, I made this joke before, because we were talking about, you know, somebody I knew had mentioned the not another penny. And I said, well, look, in fairness, like, aren't just giving us the space for free. They've sort of said, you know, we'll give you basically, you know, it's tea, coffee and biscuits. So technically coming along and eating as many biscuits as you can is a contribution to the not another penny campaign, because you'll deplete Celtic's biscuit fund.
Of a few pennies.
I was going to ask, did Hargreaves help you get your safety certificate, or did he no show to that one as well?
We'll have to
wait. In charge of the stewarding, Ross, eh?
I was going to ask Matthew, are you going to record it, or are you going to stream it, or is
no,
there any
not the first
video?
One. No. We've looked, the one downside, a lot of people have, there's been a lot of things, people have got in touch saying, oh, you could do this, could you do that, they've suggested the streaming. I think for the first one, no. I think one of the principal issues is that there is a cost issue. As I say, Celtic have been great in terms of giving us this for free, but we have quite literally a zero budget. You know, we don't have a couple of £100. We don't have any sort of budget or anything to do this. So anything that costs money, to be honest, isn't something that we're going to be doing. You know, again, people have gone through, oh, well, you could put it online and you could charge for access. And I'm not ruling that out at some point in future. As we've said, this is hopefully what will become an annual event, and we would look at these things. And at that point, maybe people with the expertise to do these things. But I'll be honest, at this stage, without a budget whatsoever, and to do it properly, it's not currently something we're going to do. But in future years, it may well be something we would think about.
Andrew's a good videographer. I set him up the other day. He done it fine.
Yes, but it wasn't my phone or anything. It had to be the... No, the guy set it up. It was on a cushion and everything. I wouldn't even thought of that idea if you hadn't said it, Ross. How stupid am I? See, away on Friday, think, thank God I was on the phone to Ross. I wouldn't have thought about how... I'm not a great problem solver. I should playing in this Celtic team. I'm not a great problem solver.
Right, done. And listen, I think the event sounds amazing. I hope it goes really well.
It does.
I suppose the one thing I'll say on your behalf, because you're too kind to say it, is if you have booked to go on it and you aren't going to go, cancel your ticket so one of these other folk can go.
Exactly.
Don't be a miserable sod or a lazy sod. Pass your ticket on to someone who wants to go, because I think it will be an amazing thing. I think, you know, I contributions to the site. I still need to arrange to come on one of your tours, but we both know I'm a fair weather guy, so until the sun is shining, you will not see me anywhere. Especially the fact that I've thankfully finally got rid of this cough, so I can now do these with you guys. But listen, I think it will be amazing. I hope that someone, even if someone on the sly wants to record Matthew's segment to send to me afterwards, that would be much appreciated. But no, I just hope that, you know, you get a good attendance. And yeah, I think it sounds amazing. I'm like Andrew, all this stuff is very new to me. Anything before I was born, kind of, you know, beyond the lines, is just empty space to me. So to me, I think it'll be amazing. I think if anybody's got an interest in all these different things, you know, you do your walks that many people have been on from both the site and for some of the other forums and things like that. So they know the quality of your work. And I'm sure that the people that you've surrounded yourself with for this will be equally as good, if not better. So yeah, I think it'll be class.
Brilliant. Yeah, I know. Onwards and upwards. And I hope you go from strength to strength with it, because I think it is. It's the kind of thing that Celtic, as you say, it's a very Celtic thing to do. And it's a very Celtic thing that only they can do it, if you like. There's a lot of things that make Celtic special, and the interest in the history and the number of amazing historians we've had, and the people who really can academically can articulate the whole Celtic story. I mean, we are blessed in a way that I don't think there's any club to rival us, so this will be an expression of that. So all the very
and
best.
If this season ends on a positive note somehow, then you can put that into history as well, because this must go down in somewhere in the history archives as like
the worst title win ever. I've got to tell Harry, that's what's got to be the title of this podcast, the worst title win ever.
Yeah. I wouldn't do a talk about that, but, you know, at least it'd be a nice bookend to the season, that if the season ends well, that, you know, maybe you throw in a wee joke about that at the end of your speech when you're doing your chat on the stage.
Brilliant, guys. Well, great to see you. Great to have you back, Ross, because it's been a wee while. So it's great to... I think it's Christmas since the last time I saw you. I was on with you two guys together. Believe it or not.
Be about then, yeah.
Yeah. So brilliant to have you back, and great to see you as always, Matthew. And as I say, all the very best. But, and I'll see you soon, guys. And thanks so much.
Enjoy the international break.
Oh, yeah. They used to crawl past, don't they? But now we'd be quite pleased that there's a wee bit of breathing space.
Yep. Right.
Good night, all.
See you later.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.